Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 7 of the Ball 5 podcast, the baseball podcast that just got done listening to the new SZA album. Chris, have you heard the new SZA album yet?
I have only checked the Phoebe Bridgers' song. Very good. That song is awesome. I can't wait to check out the rest of the album, but I was bogged down with FIFA. Jesus, I don't know why I said FIFA. I was bogged down with World Cup today, so.
I think I caught the PKs, the penalty kicks of the Croatia-Brazil matchup, while I was on my lunch break, and that was crazy. I always feel bad when they get it right, they have the goalie tricked, as the Brazil, I don't know who it was, but the guy in Brazil that had the goalie diving the wrong way, but just hit it off of the goalpost. That one sucked to see, but regardless, that was a pretty exciting match. My thoughts on the SZA album, I thought it was phenomenal. I thought it was really, really good. You'll be excited to hear it. Personal fact about me, have been doing a project where I listen to an album I've never heard of every single day for the whole year. Somehow I've made it this far and have not forgotten. But that has kind of led me down the path of listening to a lot shorter albums, and this is indeed not a short album. It's about 1 hour and 8 minutes long, but even still, it breezed by for me. It was a super easy listen. She's just incredibly talented. But enough about incredibly talented music artists that we can't really show you because of copyright issues, copyright problems. We are a baseball podcast, and a pretty big week in the baseball offseason happened. It was the winter meetings this recent week. I believe it's in the Bay Area, I believe, or California, somewhere in that state. But yeah, a lot of the big signings, a lot of the big dominoes in free agency fell, and it kind of started with the Jacob deGrom signing. That was like a little bit right before the winter meetings, but then it formally started and then really kicked off the spending there. So I guess we'll get right into it, starting off with the Mets talk. Actually, I'll briefly mention some of the smaller deals that happened over the week that I still think are pretty important and pretty nice. Josh Bell went to the Guardians for a 2 years, $33 million deal. I thought it was really cool to see the Guardians spend like that. And it will, I think it would be a good mix, especially because you have a guy like Josh Naylor, who you just can't have in the lineup against lefties. That's a pretty decent platoon, and then Bell is a good DH against righties in general. He kind of falls off in the second half, as he's shown in his career, but all in all, for a team that needs offense, he's a great source of it. Some other smaller deals. The Giants got their man, Mitch Haniger. In all reality, cool. I'm pretty sure he's a local kid from the San Francisco area, on a 3-year, $34.5 million deal. I thought that this was also a pretty decent signing. I think that it was mainly to show, I think it was to show Aaron Judge that they were willing to spend, but regardless,
Sorry, that's funny that we're willing to spend. We got Mitch Haniger.
But still, it's better than, if you saw what the lineup was projected to be with Judge in it, they needed something else. It wasn't going to be just Judge. I guess
Davis,
so.
Davis then Judge. Real quick on the Mitch Haniger one, I recall a quick tweet that I saw. I forget who it was. I really need to be mindful when I see these tweets to like recognize who they were so I can give credit to the creators. But it was a guy that said that right when John Heyman broke the Arson Judge stuff, he had texted his dad. Another person had texted his dad, who was in like Costa Rica or something with very limited cell service, saying Aaron Judge to the Giants. Sorry. And he sent like the Photoshop and everything. And then his dad was like, wow, this is awesome. 3 exclamation marks. And then when they realized that it wasn't real, his dad just wasn't answering his phone. So they're pretty sure that his dad just like lost cell reception. So for a whole day, there was just one dude in Costa Rica that thought Aaron
just
Judge was
buzzing.
A San Francisco Giant,
glowing
and just probably
the whole entire time.
Amped.
And then he got back to cell service to find out that his team just had Mitch Haniger. but I mean, still a decent signing. A couple other small ones I wanted to get to really quick. Andrew Heaney to the Rangers for 2 years, $26 million. They get their ace of that rotation, the really best pitcher there in Texas. I think other teams were offering similar deals, but he's an Oklahoma guy, so it was closest to home. And that was a pretty cool thing to see, especially with Andrew Heaney's career, how it's been, that he was able to return home after a really, really good season with the Dodgers. And then the last small ones I wanted to get to were a couple decent moves I saw from the Cubs. They got Jameson Taillon, really helping to shore up that rotation. And I think that they've made a lot of good building block moves in these off seasons. Small splashes with Stroman and Jameson Taillon. And then also, as we mentioned in a couple podcasts ago when he was non-tendered, Cody Bellinger signed with the Cubs. They've done a lot of really small moves. I think you're going to see them really explore the last two big hitters in the shortstop market. But I like the small around the margin moves that the Cubs did. Out of these smaller moves, Chris, which one do you think you got some good thoughts on?
Yeah, so I think, you know, as you were saying earlier, I think the Josh Bell one is really a very Guardians-esque move, you know? I think it's like you said, giving that ability to have that flexibility with Naylor and you know, let Naylor do other things and stuff and have Bell kind of be there and be that switch hitting presence and give some power to the lineup. You know, yes, he's not a stud, but he's pretty good. We saw that very much when he was in Washington, less so when he moved on to San Diego, but played still very good this year. I think the Bellinger one, just to kind of echo what you just said on the Cubs issue, on the Cubs scenarios, I think Bellinger is very cool. Jameson Taillon, I've always loved him as a pitcher. I think he's a great, you know, kind of mid rotation with some upside guy. Obviously, he doesn't have quite the prospect pedigree that he used to have, but I do think that he's still a pretty good pickup. With Bellinger, did you see the Josh Reddick tweet?
I did. He said something about if only I could hit 200 and strike out 150 times, maybe I'd get 20 million, which is just an all-time loser thing to say, especially for Josh Reddick, who, like, I mean, you know, he didn't have a bad career. He stuck around for a while, but still, like, it's clearly what he was doing wasn't doing a ton for him. No. I wouldn't give Josh Reddick 20 million. He didn't win an MVP at all in his career.
No. What a wild thing to say, but whatever. I also like how his bio says not JJ Reddick, so that's always fun.
But yeah, so I think that does it on the smaller moves. Now we're going to stick to the more Met-centric moves. As we mentioned, and this is probably going to be the name and meme for this podcast, the meme that says, like, the masculine urge to say we are so back after saying it was over 20 minutes ago. That's exactly how I felt over the last week, because when Jacob DeGrom signed with the Texas Rangers, obviously there was this whole feeling of, wow, this could really be, you know, the start of something really bad for this team. Who knows what direction they're going to go? But much in the way that the Mets were spurned by Steven Matz's agent last year and then went on a spending spree, they were spurned by Jacob DeGrom and went on a spending spree in free agency, signing four deals and then making a trade that I thought was really nice. The deals were Justin Verlander, obviously the reigning AL Cy Young, for 2 years and $86 million. Jose Quintana, a player who had a really solid season last year for both the St. Louis Cardinals and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Really good lefty finesse guy. And then David Robertson was the last shorter-term deal, which was 1 year, $10 million. I thought that this was funny because obviously they were in on him in the trade market. But after Philadelphia traded for him, I feel like he did overall solid, but I feel like the Mets had a couple decent games against him. So it was kind of funny to see them kind of hit him around a little and then say, all right, that's the guy I want. And then the last major contract that I wanted to get into was Brandon Nimmo, of course, being able to bring back Brandon Nimmo for 8 years, $162 million. Big deal for that guy, but, you know, he's a fan favorite. I really, really like his game. So I think that was a real importance of bringing him back. And then the last move was a trade for Brooks Raley from the Rays, a left-handed reliever who, you know, is a Rays pitcher in every stretch of the imagination. Had a very solid season as a lefty. Throws an incredible slider. Maybe has not so great opinions on the queer community. there was a story last year when the Rays did their Pride Night and had the logo with the rainbow Rays logo. He was among the players, I believe, to refuse to wear it Let me actually double check that to make sure I'm not unfairly slandering Brooks. Brooks, really, I should have done this before.
He was.
He was among one of the players to not wear the Pride logo, along with Jason Adam, Jalen Beeks, Jeffrey Springs, and Ryan Thompson. So yeah, maybe it's not going to do well around Pride Month in New York City, but regardless, is a very good reliever. So what was your thoughts over the last week on the Mets offseason?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it was huge. I think my biggest thought over the last few weeks was that we can spend $170 million on Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer, and the Braves can spend $170 million on 10 players. But
that's been so many people have been bringing up that point as a way to like dunk on the Mets. It's like, cool, we can pay our, you know, we can pay our players. Sure, it's a risky thing to give that much money into two old guys, but like, yeah, you're just saying that we can pay our players their market value in free agency.
Yeah, that was very much a dumb sentiment. I think my other favorite thing on Mets Twitter right now is that the Mets just got equal to last year, not better than last year, because Justin Verlander equates to DeGrom, Quintana equates to Walker, Nimmo is Nimmo, and all that stuff. And then I'm just like, I don't know about that. I think that these players are very good, regardless of just the intricacies and the fun things of being a Mets fan. Obviously, this is an awesome so far off season. You know, I don't think it's done. I think that the Mets are still gonna have their hands in a few different pots come for some free agents. And I really do think that the Mets have some trade value in some pretty decent prospects. I wouldn't say we have like stud prospects that are going to get you a real star, but I do think that we have some pieces that can get us some decent bench bats and some decent depth in our starting pitching. It's a little nerving, some of the guys we got, because we did get considerably older, but I think it's really good. And one thing to note, kind of my last takeaway on this, I'm really intrigued by the Robertson and Raley signings. Not for the fact I think they're wonderful moves, but I know that the Mets had some inclination to utilize Diaz when he was, you know, just facing the best part of the order. So whether that be in the eighth inning or so. And I'm really wondering now if instead of having Diaz pitch, you know, the two innings, or even I think once or twice he pitched three innings or something. To have, now you have that flexibility to have another, you know, back end of the bullpen closer, other than like someone like Trevor May or something, you know, to be able to pitch in those scenarios. So I think this is going to lead Diaz to get less saves, maybe, but overall more usage. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's really going to change their like philosophy on bullpen usage. I think they're probably still going to go the same route, especially with the financial commitment that they put into Diaz. I'm not sure if they're going to want to go towards, you know, really changing how they did it. I think that you'll probably just see like David Robertson in more of the Adam Ottavino role, unless they bring back Ottavino, which they have showed some interest in doing. But I also, a couple smaller moves on the margins. They traded for a couple guys like Jeff Brigham and Eliezer Hernandez, who were pretty high. I believe it was they were high in the percentile of like slider movement, which goes to show, along with the Raley signing, I think they're starting to build the shape of their pitches and starting to move into the future of breaking pitches, which I believe is the slider. You know, I think that there's so many ways that they've been used, whether it's the Yankees sweeper or the Dodgers slider. I think that they're starting to lean into this, and that's a great, you know, a great thing to see how they're making these moves all on the margins. I think that they are probably, like you said, not done in free agency. I think they're still going to be looking for another starter, whether or not that's Kodai Senga or bringing back Chris Bassett. I'd be really intrigued to give a look at Senga, and they're still very, very interested in him, wanting to give him maybe 5 or 6 years, which, you know, I'm all for. He's a bit of an unknown entity, but also he has the stuff, and he's impressed a lot of scouts, and I think that he'd be worth it. And then I do think that the way they're going to go for it, they're probably going to look to round out the rotation and free agency, and then maybe look to the trade market to try to find bats. You know, there's nothing too out there as far as availability goes in the trade market, but, you know, I think that that's just because, and I don't know if it was Heyman that said this, but the trade market has kind of been dead over free agency because of the kind of money that's been flowing and the free agency deals that have been going, because, you know, there are these guys out here that you can just get for money. You don't even have to give up assets, or players, rather, to get them. So I think that that's going to start to materialize as the free agency pool gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So I think that you'll probably be seeing trades in the January to February time for the Mets. And then, like I said, they're going to still be looking towards the free agency market for, you know, just fringe moves. But all in all, I do think that they've done a really good job at recouping those losses. I think that the Nimmo contract is just, it is a lot, especially when you're considering giving 8 years to a guy that's played 140 games twice in his career. So it is definitely a risk, but when you look at the center fielder market, I mean, after that, it was like Kevin Kiermaier. And if you're going to be a contender, you probably have to have a little bit better than Kevin Kiermaier in your center field spot. So I think that they recognized what the market was going to be like if they missed out on Nimmo, and realized that they just absolutely could not. Plus, you know, it seems by all intents and purposes that he really likes this. He really likes playing here. He really likes the team. So I think that that was imperative to really get that guy and really just shore up the top of the lineup. Now you're just, once again, doing these kind of moves on the margins to fill out the depth and get everything going. So all in all, I think that this really just re-energized me for the season. A week ago, I was kind of feeling dead in the water and maybe not wanting to, you know, the season to come back. But now that they've made all these moves and had this very exciting and something to look forward to in the free agency in the winter meetings, I'm all for it. But I think that does it for our more Mets talk. Now we're going to move on to some of the other big deals, because there were a lot of money flowing. And it's going to start off with Aaron Judge setting the baseball world on fire. This is, of course, Chris, you mentioned it earlier, the tweet where John Heyman mispronounced, which, all, by the way, I think the thing I loved about that is that he had the Aaron Judge mistake, deleted the tweet, retweeted it out as Aaron Judge appears to be heading to the Giants. Not once in that time that he deleted, retyped, and double-checked the tweet did he think to double-check his source, because 20 minutes later he walked it back. And it was like, if you had just spent a little bit more of that time, you know, just double-checking to see if, you know, Jimmy from across the street that just found your number is being legit about this Giants thing, you probably didn't even have to deal with the Aaron Judge thing in the first place.
It's the unofficial Twitter blue check marks here. Kidding with that. But did you see the thing? And I don't know if this was true or not. Maybe this is me not checking my sources either. The Google usage of the first searches of the word arson like spiked like crazy when that happened. Again, don't know if it's true, but pretty funny.
Who knows? I think it was true. I think I saw that. Who knows? John Heyman could have incited the next future arsonist. He could have very well started. This could be an incitement. We could see this tweet in court cases, yeah, down the line in the future.
January 6 times 2 for him.
But yeah, so there was all that talk about him going to the Giants. There were even, you know, the photoshops tweeted by official accounts that were ready to proclaim that he was going to the Giants. But then a couple minutes later, they walked it back, said that they actually didn't have, you know, the final offer there. And that's when Hal Steinbrenner went and, you know, he truly channeled the Steinbrenner mindset and just kind of said, like, all right, now that we see where we're at, Aaron, I want you to give me exactly what you need in order to stay with the Yankees, and I will give that to you. And, you know, that's a level of ownership that I kind of appreciate sometimes, that willingness to say, you know, forget all of this other stuff. We have a star player that we need to keep, and they needed to keep him. Like, if this team was a 99-win team, it was very good, but, like, without Judge, I don't know what this Yankees team looked like. There's not really anything you can do to replace that productivity that he provided and that stability in the lineup that he had. So they realized that they needed him, and it's kind of even crazier when you see the deal that he left behind from the Padres, which was, I think it was $400 million over 10 years, which, I mean, you know, I think that that really goes to show that Judge didn't want to leave New York and was just kind of embarrassed by the deal, the talking over that Cashman had with him at the beginning of the season. And that's the only reason he really wanted to explore his market, because, I mean, that's a lot of bread. That's a lot of money to turn down at, along with the extra year. So, yeah, I think that was really interesting.
Yeah, especially to play for a team that he would push them into World Series contention, you know? Not that the Padres aren't already there, but it's just like Aaron Judge obviously puts you over that marker there. So yeah, it was definitely something that was interesting, you know, definitely, you know, cool to see him, stay loyal, stick to his guns, and also get the bag. I think that's really nice, to see. I wish, you know, it wasn't with the Yankees, so I didn't have nice things to say about the Yankees, because to me, this was just like another Yankee thing. It was like, oh, this was really, you know, hard and tried and true, but Aaron Judge is going to be a Yankee forever, and it just, I don't know, instills the whole baseball history, blah, blah, blah. They want to give him a captain, and no one's worn it since Derek Jeter type thing, and I was just like, ugh, you know, crying. Like, just...
Yeah, it was getting corny. It was definitely getting corny over there. But, what was I going to say? So, I mean, we obviously went over all the money and the Judge signing it and all that. What I was going to say, actually, though, is that with the thing, too, is that, like, his production is obviously going to dip. He's not going to hit 62 homers again. You know, so I just wonder how this deal maybe is going to look soon when he's just putting up, you know, the Aaron Judge seasons, how people are going to look at it. Because we've seen it, you know, we've seen it obviously in New York that they're probably going to look, and he's going to have, you know, his typical seasons where he's batting like, you know, 280 and hitting 38 home runs in a season. It's like, this is the guy we're paying 9 years, $360 million for. So I think it's just going to be, there's probably going to be a lot of opportunities for slander there. But once again, just a move that the Yankees absolutely had to make if they wanted to stay in contention. There was probably going to be some dark times ahead for that team trying to move forward off of that if they didn't keep him. But back to another player that the San Diego Padres missed out on despite giving a big deal for was Trey Turner, who decided to join the Phillies. 11 years, $300 million. At first, this was a little, you know, it seemed like a lot in the years department, especially for a guy that, you know, a lot of his game revolves around this, you know, 99th percentile sprint speed. You know, a lot of his game relies around his speed, but I still like it, you know, regardless. The way I always view free agency is you can't do this, oh my God, that's an overpay stuff in free agency, because, like, yeah, it's an overpay. That's the whole point about bidding with other teams. You're not going to get, like, completely fair value if other teams are going to bid alongside you, because it's the whole point of it. They're going to bid more than you because they want the player more than you. So obviously you're going to have to do stuff like give a guy who's all based on speed 11 years. So I love this move for the Phillies. It just, you know, it takes that lineup and just really, really takes it to a whole nother level with the speed, the power, the contact ability. Just everything he provides on the offensive end. The more and more I'm talking about it, the more and more afraid I'm getting of this Phillies lineup thinking about having to face it.
Oh, 100%. I mean, the only, I think, and I don't want to say good thing, but the only thing to kind of the Mets credit for this is that we have faced them in Washington, so it's not like we don't know, you know, how to compete against a player like Trey, but this Phillies team is going to be scary next year, I think. I really do look at that team and wonder, you know, I don't see much reprieve there. I think that, you know, with Trey, I think that his real interesting piece is his power numbers, you know. Maybe juice ball merchant something, but he does have an almost 30 home run season. But mostly he's hitting in like the 15 to 20 home run area. That's pretty decent from, you know, your speed first 300 hitter, you know? And that makes you wonder if maybe when his speed starts to go, can he kind of shift a little bit and focus a little bit more on power? And then maybe now all of a sudden he becomes a consistent 20 home run hitter, kind of going into his later years, I guess you could say. He's 29 or 30, so old person here. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but I really do think that he is just a really good player, and he's going to fit really well into that Phillies lineup. That ballpark is a really good ballpark to hit in, and I think the Phillies are just going to be a very scary team with their kind of great starting pitching and great lineup. They're going to be a formidable opponent.
Yeah, I think the big thing is, especially if Nicholas Castellanos is anything like he was before last year, this lineup is incredibly dangerous, even before Bryce Harper comes in. And you know Bryce Harper is going to probably come in around May or June and just completely add another aspect of dynamism to this team. You mentioned the starting pitching, which that top three is already really solid, and they just nabbed a four-starter in Taijuan Walker. They paid, you know, I saw this the contract figure, and it felt like a lot, but once again, I'm going back to my point that I just made a couple minutes ago that, of course, it's a lot. That's just the whole idea of bidding. People are going to want to pay more than you. So, I believe it was 4 years, $74 million, or 4 years, $71 million, one of those two. But yeah, I really like Taijuan. I think he's a great guy and a good pitcher. He's had a lot of struggles in the second halves of seasons, but, you know, I do think that some of that is from the fact that he was injured a lot early in his career, so he just didn't have that innings, built up in his arm. So I do think that even still, if what you're getting is the first half of Taijuan Walker, it's really, really good for this team, because at the end of the day, he's, you know, you just need a four-starter. He's better than the options that you had in-house. He's better than going back out and re-signing Noah Syndergaard, you know, sticking with Bailey Falter as your four guy. And behind that trio of Ranger Suarez, Zach Wheeler, and Aaron Nola, I think that he's really going to help pack a punch.
Yeah, for a four guy, I mean, I love Taijuan here, and I, you know, wish the best for him. Glad, again, he got his money and stuff, and for a four starter, you're not going to do much better than Taijuan, so I thought it was a great play. Great pick on their part.
Yeah, and then, you know, they added Matt Strom, which, whatever. Another Red Sox to go, leave the team. Which, speaking of Red Sox that have left their teams, I'm sorry, all the Red Sox fans that follow us, Chris and I respectively, you guys can skip around to the podcast. I won't give a timestamp to go to, but you'll figure it out. We mentioned earlier about the Padres bidding on all of these teams, so apparently they just had a ton of money burning a hole in their pocket. So they decided, well, we missed out on a shortstop. We missed out on an outfielder. Let's go for another shortstop. And they signed Xander Bogaerts, the X-Man, going to San Diego. Zandiego, as they called it in their release, for 11 years and $280 million. Now, we just mentioned the years thing with Trey Turner, but this kind of felt like a lot of years there. And it's one of those deals that I was talking it over with a lot of my Red Sox fan friends. And it's just kind of the simple fact that, sure, I think that if you just said point blank that Xander Bogaerts, you know, signed for 11 years, $280 million, you could see why the Red Sox didn't go for it. It's a lot of years, especially when they weren't really willing to budge past 6 or 7 years. But when you add all the context of the negotiations that they've had for the past 2 years and all the lowball offers that he's received, if the Red Sox probably offered him the 6-160 deal that they offered at the end of free agency as their final offer, if they just offered that in the preseason negotiations, he's probably a Red Sox for the next 6 years. So, I mean, this is just one of those things that we saw with Jacob deGrom. It's one of those things where if you have the opportunity to get stuff done in-house, you got to take that opportunity up, because if it gets to free agency, you're always going to find somebody that's crazier and more desperate than you. And if you're not seeing anyone that's crazier or more desperate than you, then you are the crazy and desperate one. So they found a team that was desperately trying to give away this money. And, you know, Xander took the opportunity. And, you know, I think that Xander Bogaerts is one of the most underrated players in MLB, and it's just because of his consistency. You know, he doesn't really have, like, an outlier 150 OPS plus. He hit 40 home runs in the season. You know, his career high in home runs is 33 in the 2019 juice ball season, where he finished fifth in the MVP voting. But other than that, he's just a super duper consistent around a 130 OPS plus every year. The shape of it changes every once in a while. Didn't really have the power this year, only hit 15 home runs, but even still, you know, it hit over 300, got on base at a very solid clip. I mean, this is just, and even the defense came up to, you know, around league average, slightly above average. You know, I think that Xander Bogaerts is just a phenomenal player, and depending on what they do with Fernando Tatis Jr., I think that maybe he'll probably go to the outfield for now, and then when they feel like, you know, phasing out Ha-Sung Kim in the lineup, they'll probably, as Xander gets older, move him to second and Tatis to shortstop. But I think that this is just a phenomenal pickup for the Padres.
Totally. I think, you know, so as DJ kind of alluded to, we're kind of Eastern based, Rhode Island based and stuff. And so we're in Red Sox country here. And the grumblings have been crazy for, I'd say, probably a year and a half now, at least, maybe even 2 years, about re-signing Xander. And there have just been so much, you know, contempt with that relationship, which is a bummer because it's not just a numbers thing with Xander, I think. You know, I'm a big, like, eye test plus the numbers type of guy. And Xander Bogaerts was the heart of that team. When they needed a hit, Xander was the guy that was going to get it. You know, he was one of those players that just, like, if he was there, you knew that he was going to contribute to some degree. And he contributed. And yes, it does show in his numbers too. But as you're mentioning, he doesn't have anything that's just, like, crazy standout, wow, this guy is so freaking good numbers. But he does have that, you know, kind of like punch and stuff like that. So, I think he is someone that's going to play hard and someone that's going to go out there and play for you, you know. I'm intrigued to see, again, I feel like he is profiling more and more as a second baseman. And I am wondering, as you said, you know, moving, I was thinking about the Tatis to the outfield and doing all of those things. You have to think that it was within the contract negotiations that Xander talked about wanting to move, because I know that with the Red Sox, that was a huge point of contention. He didn't want to move. You know, when they signed Story, they basically said, don't worry, you are our shortstop, don't worry about it, you know. And I was wondering, even at that time, if this was their contingency plan. I know that Story is kind of iffy now, but, you know, I wondered if it was their contingency plan at that point. And now it's really seeming as if it may have been their contingency plan. And now you almost wonder, were they ever actually trying to sign Xander Bogaerts? You know, is this another, we tried to get this guy, you know? I don't want to slander the Red Sox too much because I do have a lot of respect for them and I have a lot of respect for my friends and everything. But you really got to wonder, the last slanderous thing I'm going to say, why would Devers want to sign here? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I think that there was some rumors that he wasn't super close with. I think he may have said that he wasn't super close with Mookie when they traded him. But even still, like, you know, this guy's early career years have been, I believe he was just coming up, or no, he was a prospect when Ortiz was going. But since then, his early career years are Mookie Betts getting traded for, you know, I mean, I like the player, I like some of the players that they got, but in all respect, kind of, you know, subpar value for a guy like Mookie Betts, who just signed an extension right after he got traded, and then this whole Xander Bogaerts thing. So it's not the greatest look for your superstar prospect third baseman, and especially because him and Xander were very, very close. They were very good friends. So, you know, I don't think it bodes too well. You know, I think that maybe they'll take this as an opportunity to learn their lesson rather than an opportunity to, you know, take this and say, well, there's two ways they can take it. They could take it as a lesson and then say, we are going to go all out to re-sign Rafael Devers, or they're going to take it as like, well, we're screwed anyway, so let's just hit the full reset and trade Devers, which, I, you know, for Red Sox fans' case, I really hope that's not the case, because that's just, you know, that's just a heartbreaking thing to go through as a fan, to have not one, not two, but three of these, you know, franchise guys that you thought were going to be around for the long haul just gone. So, I, you know, for the sake of my Red Sox fan friends, I do like joking around, but I really, really do hope that it doesn't come down to that, as fearful as I may be that it could. But, you know, they did do something. They didn't sit on their hands all offseason. They made a couple deals for some outfield help and some bullpen help, including going off for Masataka Yoshida from Japan. I believe he was playing for the Oryx Buffaloes in the Japan League. So I just looking at this guy, obviously I have not grinded too much film on this guy, but just looking at him, from what I've heard, he's a super high contact guy, and you can see it in his batting averages, all around the 330s, 350s even. He does not strike out a lot. He walks a ton. So I think that I've heard from some people that the power is iffy on how well it will translate. But, you know, contact pretty much always translates. But, you know, 5 years, $90 million, including the $10 million signing posting fee, which I believe brings it up to $100 million. It's not insignificant amount to bring in, but I think that they kind of had to do something to bring this offense back. I just, you know, I hope it means that, you know, the power is also going to translate over, because, you know, if he's a corner outfielder with solid defense and just high contact skills, that's good. It's very good. It just feels like, you know, something that's not quite what they need. They could use a little bit more than that.
Yeah, and you don't have Xander. And you don't have another name that hasn't been talked about a lot, although I know he was kind of iffy, but you don't have JD Martinez or anyone now to bring that pop to kind of push you over a little bit. So I don't know. I think that I don't hate these moves. You know, a lot of people were really trashing the Yoshida signing for saying that they thought he was, you know, worth half as much. I'm a big contact guy too. I think that if you, as you said, you know, contact skills generally translate. So I'm big into thinking that he's going to hit well. And as long as you put the bat on the ball, something's going to happen, especially in Fenway. Let's also remember that, too. Fenway's, you know, a pretty decent park to hit in. So I think that he's going to play well. And I think that jumping into the next thing, you know, the Kenley Jansen signing is pretty good for the Red Sox too. I think Kenley Jansen still has some in the tank, especially over the next 2 years. My thing is, why do you do these moves? I don't know. I think because I'm in Boston, I'm getting a lot of, like, I just want a Radiohead talk about Boston and then be kind of like a shock jock radio guy. But I don't know why you do these moves if you're not planning something big. You know, like, why do this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just kind of them realizing that they have to do something. You know, you can't fully just sit on your ass over an offseason after finishing below the Orioles in a year in which you had some kind of hope building off of the momentum of an ALCS trip. They had to do something, but obviously they haven't shown that they, you know, are going to go all out for it. I think that, you know, some people have mentioned it. I feel like maybe you have to kind of be a player for Correa, but also, I don't know, does a guy like Carlos Correa want to be around? Can you sell to Scott Boras, who you just finished negotiating on Xander Bogaerts for, that you weren't the guy for Xander, but you are the guy for Carlos Correa? So, I mean, I don't know if they can do... They have to do something, because Marcelo Meyer, while a great prospect, is only 19 years old. He's not old enough to, you know, be the next up-and-coming savior of the franchise. So they can't just, you know, sign just like a whatever shortstop to fill in the gap or try to fill it in-house. I feel like you have to do something not crazy big, but, I mean, you have to get something a little bit more than just like a middle-of-the-road whatever shortstop.
Yes, I agree. I think you have to go out and do something. And I hate to say it this way, I do think that the AL East is I don't want to say wide open, but I think that it can be open. I know that obviously the Yankees are really good and the Blue Jays are really good and the Rays are always there, you know, but I do think that there are some competition to be had in that division, and to kind of just, I don't know, leave your star shortstop there and all that stuff is just interesting to me. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough situation they find themselves in, and, you know, I'm glad I'm not the GM, because, you know, it's one of those situations where I don't know how I would even go about really, really filling it out. So, you know, I think that does it on the Red Sox. We'll go over one last of the major free agent signings, and that was Wilson Contreras.
Hell yeah.
Signing with the Cardinals. I think this is the first non-re-signing prediction that either of us got right, if I had to guess. I know we both guessed Judge coming back to the Yankees.
Have it up.
The other of the top free agents that signed, I don't think that we had any of them. We'll go back to this when all 10 of them have signed. But you did have Wilson Contreras going to the Cardinals. And it is, you know, it's a perfect fit. They just had Yadier Molina leave. I mean, he left a while ago, but he technically just in the physical realm left the team this year and retired. So they needed somebody to come in and play catcher. And I just thought, you know, it made a lot of sense, but it just felt cursed to have the guy that's replacing the franchise catcher of the St. Louis Cardinals come directly from the Cubs, not even having a pit stop anywhere else beforehand. I just thought that was funny, but I mean, I think that this is a really great signing for the Cardinals. This is, you know, whether or not he's been good on the defensive end, I don't really think matters a ton when you're a catcher that's, you know, consistently around high 700s, low 800s on the OPS, hitting over 20 homers a year, and, you know, just providing that really good offense.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I do, you know, the biggest reason why I had him going to the Cardinals was because of the glaring need that the Cardinals have, and that it's really the only, like, glaring need that they have in the offense. Now, I'll talk about pitching for a second with the Cardinals too, but I really do think that Wilson Contreras kind of just puts that bow on your offense, and now you have that, you know, like a very good lineup there. Obviously kind of cemented by Arenado and Goldie. But now you bring in Contreras to kind of be that other bat there. And then mixed with your O'Neills and your Carlsons and all those other guys there, the young crop of talent that's in St. Louis. And, they have a really good hitting team. Now, I just don't know if they're going to have a good starting pitching rotation. I feel like there has not been a lot of grumblings about St. Louis being in on these starting pitchers that are in the free agency here. And maybe I'm being crazy here, but I really just don't see how you can kind of go to bat with your lineup, but I don't know how you can kind of go out there and have this as your starting rotation. But maybe I'm being crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're wrong there. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns with the rotation as far as, do you know what you're getting out of Jack Flaherty anymore? He's been coming off of a lot of injuries, you know, recently. Can you trust what you're going to be getting out of Adam Wainwright heading into his age 68 season? You know, Miles Michaelis is solid. I think that Jordan Montgomery really impressed coming over, but I don't think that they're top of the line guys. I think that maybe they could be tossing their hand to the rings of a Carlos Rodon. I think they may have to. You know, maybe have to is a bit strong, because there's not a lot of things you have to do when you're facing other NL Central competition. But I mean, as far as contending goes, I think they probably have to look for a top line thing. You know, they do have some prospects coming down the pipeline. Matthew Liberatore is a pretty good pitching prospect, but once again, you don't really look to prospects to fill those bigger holes. You look to them to supplement them. So
except with the Cardinals, they're gonna work some devil magic, and Liberatore's gonna win a freaking Cy Young or something.
Yeah, you know, the more and more you talk about it, and the more and more you mentioned it, I'm kind of coming around on maybe, putting an addendum to my Rodon pick, because he's obviously not going to the Mets or the Rangers anymore. I would probably suggest that I think that the Cardinals should probably throw their hat in the ring there.
Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting. Definitely interesting.
Yeah, and then real quick, I just wanted to talk about, before we get to our Remember Some Guys segment, I just want to kind of see where we stand in the off season after the winter meetings. There's still a lot of big names left in the market. You know, as far as the pitching goes, we just mentioned Carlos Rodon, but there's also Chris Bassett and Kodai Senga still left. I'm kind of wondering what their markets are looking like, especially a guy like Bassett who, I think he was a pretty steadying force in the Mets rotation, but the more and more I think about him, the more and more I feel like I could do, looking in another direction. I would be happy to bring him back, but aside from, other things, if I could pick Senga up, I probably would, maybe over Bassett, but I'm wondering what his market is looking like as far as the years go, especially because I think he's around 34 years old. But there's still the other top two shortstops, Carlos Correa and Dansby Swanson, still yet to sign. I still hold true on my Swanson to the Cubs pick. I think that the Cubs are going to pick up one of those two shortstops. And another interesting thing I'm seeing is that neither of us even really entertained the thought of Carlos Correa returning back to the Twins, but there has been a little bit of buzz. He did say, I believe, that he enjoyed his time back there. So I am curious as to if that might be an option of him returning to Minnesota.
Yeah, I think that is a very interesting piece with the whole Correa to Minnesota. When Minnesota was showcasing their new jerseys, they were saying that a lot of the players were FaceTiming Correa at the same time, and that a lot of fans, and I know this doesn't mean much, but a lot of fans were just kind of saying, like, this is weird. And for a guy that they've only had for a year, but saying that it's weird not having Correa at this right now. So maybe they are kind of in on this. So
do you think a player's ever looked at a jersey rebrand and said, no, I'm not going back there? Like, do you think that he saw those jerseys on body and was like, actually, do I want to have people walking around wearing my jersey looking like that? Do I want to walk around looking like that? He's got tough competition coming back after wearing those Tequila Sunrise jerseys in Houston. And yeah. Houston generally, I think, has one of the better uniform sets in the league. But I do actually wonder sometimes if somebody looks at the jersey options like I do when I'm picking my team and whatever my career mode I'm looking at. I always look at the jerseys to see what would be fun to play in. I wonder if players go that direction.
One player that definitely does it, and it's Chris Sale.
He's very particular about his color, his jersey colors. Did not really dig those throwbacks. All right, so I think that does all the news talk. Now it's time to remember some guys. Chris, do you want to lead it off? Or since you did it last time, I think that I can probably lead it off this time. So yeah. I actually just started thinking about what I was going to do for this. I always forget that I'm going to, even though I'm the one that came up with this segment, I'm the one that always forgets whether or not we're going to do it in the middle of a show. So I just thought about what I was going to do recently, but I'm going to go with the Shark, Jeff Samardzija, one-time All-Star. And I think the reason I'm remembering him is because I did see a tweet about him recently. I forget who posted it. I did recently see a tweet about him because I remembered that the one time he made the All-Star team, he couldn't play in the game because he was traded from the Chicago Cubs across leagues to the Oakland Athletics, and then did not qualify for either roster. So that kind of sucks, especially for a one-time All-Star, that the one time he pitched well enough to make an All-Star team, he couldn't go through and actually pitch in the All-Star game. So I'm not sure how he felt about that, but the big thing with Jeff Samardzija was that he was a former receiver at Notre Dame, and I felt like he was a really intense guy on the mound. He was going to be an innings eater, pitched over 200 innings, five times during his career. He was always just, a solid middle to back end of the rotation guy. And even in his peak, when he got to that All-Star team, around an ace level pitcher, but he was always just a solid guy, really intense pitcher. I'm going to go with the Shark, Jeff Samardzija.
Yeah, I think that's a really good pick. he just had some real, like, kind of sneaky dominant years, you know. He was always one of those guys, you know, just coming into, as we mentioned, you know, a lot of the Remember the Guys, especially now, have been kind of fantasy darlings, and he was definitely a fantasy darling. He was one of those guys that you knew you could get, and he was gonna give you a good start. He was gonna do something for you. And also, just a really fun tidbit, you heard it all the freaking time, I know you said it, you know, world-class wide receiver out there. And just such an awesome nickname, the Shark, you know, Smarja. It just
so
worked. I don't know. I just loved it. And then, you know, he was part of that rotation with Lincecum, right, and everything?
He went to the Giants in free agency in 2016, so he was just post-Lincecum.
Okay. I knew that there was some type of link. And I couldn't tell if he was kind of around that kind of the big three over there type situation. But
I think that might have been teetering towards the end of Matt Cain's prime, and then that was fully past. I'm not even sure if Tim. Let me double check. I'm not even sure if Tim Lincecum was on the team.
Lincecum wasn't. It was
Bumgarner, Cueto.
Cueto and Smarja.
Got
and
it.
PB
yeah.
was there too. Kane was there, like you were saying. PV, Matt Moore. Oh, that, spoiler alert.
Remember some teams. The 2016 San Francisco Giants.
Let's go Giants. But yeah, I'm not going to pick Matt Moore because he just recently was still in the league.
I also feel like even though he's still in the league.
He still
he's
is
not
in
recently
the league.
Still in the league.
And that was, although he will be a fun one come sometime. My guy is going to be someone, so I did the thing where, like you kind of just said, completely forgot that we were doing this, and I was looking at Baseball Reference, and I saw a gentleman by the name of Lorenzo Cain, and that's not my player, and I was just like, you know what, two All-Stars and also played last year, let me look at his teammate from the Royals, Alex Gordon. Still not my person, because Alex Gordon was probably a little bit too good for our thing. But when I clicked on a random Kansas City Royals team, I found my guy, and it is Billy Butler.
Country breakfast.
Very funny to me, because I remember Billy Butler as just nonstop home run hitting guy. And he... most home runs he ever hit in a season was 2012, when he was an All-Star, his lone All-Star year, and he had 29 home runs, and I don't know, he was like pretty much a 20 home run guy his whole rest of his career. He hit 147 home runs in 10 years, so I really don't know why I remember him as a home run guy. Maybe I literally remember him just from that one year. But I don't know. I just think Billy Butler is just one of those players that you're never gonna see again. Literally just hit. I don't think that he played much in defense. And he just was apparently fine. He wasn't great. But he sticks in my head. I always know Billy Butler.
Yeah. Had a really solid prime from around 2009 to, 2013, where he had around a 120, 130 OPS plus all year. It is kind of funny to be, you know, that kind of build, you know, 6 feet, 260, named Country Breakfast, quite literally, and not be a huge masher, have a career high of 29 home runs. But yeah, I think he definitely fits the bill.
Sorry to cut you off.
No worries.
The funny part, he's resilient. If from 2009 to 2013, he played 159 games, 158 games, 159 games, 161 games, 162 games. He wasn't hurt a lot. So it's funny to think, like, Country Breakfast, and like you said, like he had 29 home runs that one year, and I remember him as like this bruiser in the middle of their lineup.
Well, to be fair, the Royals were never quite known for their power, so yeah, he might have just been the bruiser of the Royals lineup.
And he did also hit a crap ton. He was, you yeah. know, OBP's in the high to mid threes every year.
Yeah, I think that that's a very good pick. I think we were looking at the same homepage with, you know, Joey Cora, Johnny Cueto, Blake Treinen, and Lorenzo Cain on there. And I was thinking down the Royals line for Lorenzo Cain, and I was trying to think of, like, Alcides Escobar, because he's a one-time All-Star in the funniest way, that it was just when they were doing the fan vote for the starting lineup, and it was just after the Royals started getting that buzz as, like, a World Series contender. So they were just, everybody was just voting for Royals players, and he ended up getting in the All-Star game. So if you want to talk about a Mickey Mouse All-Star appearance, basically any Kansas City Royal that made, I think it was like the 2016 All-Star game.
Yep, that and the Cubs, right? Cubs did something
around that. I think it was, Cubs was maybe 27. I think it was literally also the year after the Cubs won the World Series that the Cubs did that too. It was like Addison Russell, Anthony Rizzo, Jason Hayward was probably high up there.
There's one name. He had glasses. He was not a great player. They did the fan vote bracket. Remember when they did the bracket thing? He faced up against David Wright.
This is a wild... Eric Sogard. Eric Sogard, the face of the MLB. He won the face of the MLB over David Wright.
Yep, I remember that. And I was so fucking pissed off. So irrationally pissed off, but I was so fucking pissed off. Because that was also, I think, the Captain America David Wright deal.
Yeah. Fan votes are fun. It's like when Zaza Pachulia was running up all-star votes and almost getting a starting spot in basketball. But I think that just about does it. Chris, do you have any parting thoughts?
Yeah, the last thing I want to say, so we were talking about where the winter meetings are, and I Googled it on Wikipedia. Looked it up on Wikipedia, and I guess Google is a verb, right? So they were located in San Diego. Now, initially, I was like, it's always in San Diego. Apparently, it's not. It's in a mostly a different place every single year. But next year, they have it listed in Seoul. So the winter meetings next year is going to be insane because of the time difference of Seoul, South Korea. It's going to be crazy. You're not going to be able to stay awake and see any of these things. I'm pretty sure Seoul is like a 12-hour difference.
Yeah, it's 12:21 p.m. in Seoul right now, so they're 9 hours ahead. Actually, no, that's not it. Let me do some math here. It's 12:21 p.m. on December 10th in Seoul, South Korea. So they are 14 hours ahead of us on the East Coast. So we're probably going to get some crazy... Is that really where the winter meetings are going to be held?
I don't know. If you want to trust Wikipedia, which Wikipedia is also asking me to donate $2, so I don't know. But
well, they're always asking for money.
If you want to trust Wikipedia, they are saying that it's going to be held in Seoul.
Huh. The event will be held in Busan, South Korea from November 14-16 and Seoul from November 14-15. Huh.
That's wicked cool, but holy shit, next year is going to be insane.
That's pretty cool. I hope that that's true. And wait, no, that's the MLB World Tour. That's completely off. Okay, so maybe we'll figure it out. We'll do some deep diving whether or not it's actually going to be in Seoul, South Korea, but that will be very fun if it is.
This Wikipedia article says it will.
Okay. So I think that just about does it. We hope you enjoyed. And yeah, as always, let us know if you have any ideas for podcasts. Always reach out to us on @ball5pod on Instagram and Twitter, as well as my Twitter @DJ_Lopes9. Actually, no, DJ_Lopes_9.
Oh, fuck you.
You're Lopesy at Lopesy. 16.
At Lopesy 16.
Yes. Anyway, follow us. We tweet out fun things sometimes. So, yeah, once again, hope you enjoyed, and hope you have a good one.
Yep, see y'all.